Welcome to MoneyWeb Now. Business news every morning.
Monday, 1st of August, I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, chatting with Alex Dace, UOH updates, Ellie's results. I wonder, these once were glory stocks, are they perhaps just left alone? Zach Callisto from Karoo, good numbers from them, especially in Asia, Southeast Asia. That's starting to pick up for them. I'm curious if they've seen sort of kilometers driven return to normal. Bagnili James from Future Growth, funding and practical issues on energy deregulation. We had the statement by the president last Monday evening. Practically, how does it work? The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Petrol price to reduce in August. That will be Wednesday. The fuel levy relief ended, but we're still going to see petrol down by a rand 32. Business day, solar providers are a quick gazetting of generation rules. And this is the thing. What was said last Monday is great, but we need that implementation. We need those rules brought to government and approved. Morning markets, US was green on Friday. S&P up 1.4%, NASDAQ up 1.8%. Asia's green with Sydney up 0.4% and Turkey up 0.5%. Commodities mostly green, gold 1,778. Brent weaker at $103.08 a barrel. Platinum $887. Palladium $2,102 an ounce. Rand 1663. Top 40 opening call, about 80 points to the green. That's a little over a tenth of a percent. That as Tencent trades down 1.3% in the Hong Kong lunch break.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting with Alex Dace from Thumbola Wealth. Alex, appreciate the early morning time. I mentioned in the intro, we had an update from EOH as they head into their closed period. Debt coming down sort of just under 1.4 billion, still well ahead of their market cap. We had results from Ellie's earlier in the week. Both ones were high flyers, sort of come to ground. I mean, this sort of stock, do you sort of wait for them to sort themselves out before really taking the time and energy to dig into them?
Good morning, Simon. Yes, let's start with EOH. So obviously, firstly, both companies have got lots of legacy issues as well as debt issues. And when it comes to debt, you know, you have to be more careful because if things do not turn around, I mean, it can spiral out of control quite quickly. And even though the share prices are down 90-odd% from its highs, they can still drop another 100% from this level. Okay, so be careful. We want to participate here. So starting with EOH, you know, so they have done quite a good job deleveraging the business as well, roughly about 2 billion in January 2021. And now it's, as you say, about 1.3 billion, and it's going to be another 100 million they're going to pay. But before they give, when they're going to give their results out in the next month or two, they are going to give an update on how they're going to fix the capital structure. Mm-hmm. And that's really what's key for this business moment. Operationally, they gave an update and say, well, you know, things are doing the same as H1. However, there is high interest costs, of course, and that just highlights once again the need to solve the capital structure. So we're going to have to wait to see what exactly they're going to do. Are they going to bring in a strategic new investor? Is it going to be a rights issue? What's the magnitude of the rights issue that's going to be required or investments that are going to be required? And that's going to give you a sense if that will give them a chance to restructure the business and then try to grow the business again from this base going forward. But without fixing the capital structure, it will simply not be possible. Yeah. So Stephen Fongola and his team have done a tremendous job there, but you've got this, you're almost fighting one hand tied in your back. So they have to fix this, and then they might have a fighting chance going forward as EOH. Mm-hmm. Ellie's, when I looked at results, once again, I mean, revenue, I think, was down over 20%. So this is a business that's going backwards operationally. And at the same time, they need to re-engineer the business. So for those of you who are not familiar, Ellie's does lots of business for multi-choice, these TV installations and so forth. We know that part of the business is going backwards. And as well, they're trying to re-engineer the business towards more renewable energies like solar and generators and so forth. But it's lots of competition there as well. So, I mean, that's also a problem. So what's going to make Ellie's different than some of the other competitors? But at the same time, they've got this very weak balance sheet, which means they can't really raise the working capital they require to do business. So, for example, in the last set of results, they said they lost out in sales of over 100 million because they didn't have enough cash. At the same time, you've got import problems from China and so forth. So, I think Elly's also needs to do a capital restructure, but the core business seems weaker than what EOH has. And I think the probability of, and at the same time, they need to change the business model. I think there's much more higher risk in Elly's compared to EOH. Not saying EOH is low risk, but certainly Elly's is, you know, not for the faint-hearted.
Yeah, I take your point on that. I mean, Elly's is there, and they can, you know, they can't even really trade their way out of it because of that just lack of stock and that capital structure. They've still got a fair chunk of debt there. We'll leave it there. That is Alex Dace, portfolio manager in Fumbolo Wealth, and that's our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter. EOH, Elly's, both once high-flying JSE stocks, really setting the world alight. Do you think they'll ever recover their former glory? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement, and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
Chatting in a moment with Zach Callisto, CEO and founder of Karooooo, struggling to get him on the line from Singapore. They had results. It's their Q1 for 2023 for them. It's the ending May 2022. Revenue was up 28%. Earnings per share was up 42%. Subscribers up 13%. And Southeast Asia doing particularly strong. And that, I suspect, in large part, is the sort of COVID-19 disruption. As I've chatted with Zach over the last year or two, there's always been that challenge, particularly in Asia, of just literally people moving around and being able to get staff from one area to another and salespeople, etc. So that has been sort of a significant issue and a challenge for them. The logistics business, remember they bought Pickup, which is a small little logistics sort of last mile. I've actually experienced it buying some products more recently online, and they've been the delivery. It's fairly slick. I mean, it absolutely works. We got Zach on the line. Zach, appreciate the early morning time. In the last couple of years when we've been chatting, your Southeast Asia operations have been sort of under pressure thanks to COVID, and your ability of sales teams just to literally move from A to B. Looking at these results, that seems to have largely disappeared. And in fact, Southeast Asia coming quite strong.
Good morning, Simon. In actual fact, what we've really moved is from a COVID, 2 years of COVID to post-COVID, where we actually have more people off work. So it's, in a way, COVID is still around. But the good thing is the borders have opened. Mm-hmm. We're able to get our staff into the regions, and we've started allocating capital to growing Asia. But I think it's still early days. I think we're going to need 2 to 3 quarters before we get the momentum.
Are you seeing, I mean, you've obviously got insight to the data. I mean, I take your point that we sort of moved to post-COVID. I mean, it's not gone, but of course the borders are open. We can move freely. That's quite significant. Are you seeing your customers sort of outdriving at pre-pandemic levels? I mean, in that sense, is activity sort of getting back to normal as well?
I think activity is largely back to normal. If we see the average kilometers being driven per vehicle and we analyze that data, which we do, we certainly believe everybody's back to normal activity. At least the last time we did it, which was in May, we were at 93%.
Okay, so that's pretty much there.
That's close. Yeah, pretty much there.
Supply chains. Last time we chatted, you said that it wasn't such a big issue for you because you'd had stock. The big issue now, of course, subsequent to that, has been inflation coming through as well. Are you finding inflation pressure on actual the units?
Well, I certainly find there's inflation pressure, not so much on our telematics devices because we had re-engineered our devices in the last 2 years to make sure we can get components. But we really believe the inflation's coming. We saw a very cautious outlook by businesses and consumers in the first quarter. You know, they were very cautious about the inflation and the increase in petrol prices, and there was a bit of resistance. However, we've seen that resistance slowly disappear about Q2, and I'm hoping that the inflation will disappear over the next 12 to 18 months.
Yeah, and I take your point around the corporates, and that might then sort of slow their process. On the retail side, the folks who put one of your telematics into their vehicle, do they, when times are tough, do you see people perhaps cancelling contracts or struggling to get the money, or is this one of the things that people are aware, and in many cases they get a benefit to the insurance by having the telematic?
Well, I think initially there was definitely an increase in non-payments. I think we had basically three things to deal with. Mm-hmm. The one was inflation, so coming through from the fuel prices. The other was the KwaZulu-Natal floods. Mm-hmm. And then we also had the Eskom, which also put quite a lot of pressure on households. You know, they couldn't cook anymore. Mm. It was winter. You know, it was quite difficult for your average consumer. So that I think those three factors that put quite a lot of pressure on the consumers.
A quick last question. You made the acquisition of Pickup, and in fact, we chatted at that point. I was saying in the intro, I've actually had a couple of deliveries from them. And it's different to the normal sort of when I get a delivery and they say, we will deliver on Tuesday. And it's like, yeah, but Tuesday is a big day. And you've renamed it to Karoo Logistics. It's working well, and it's still small, but it's an operation which certainly from my experience is a whole lot of sort of more friendly towards the customer.
Well, it's working well. We're adding a tremendous amount of value to the operations of the customers. Mm. And we're rolling out the business into more and more stores of different commercial customers. And since we've bought it until today, we've quadrupled revenue. And we certainly are dedicating ourselves to continue to grow that business, despite it being still quite small.
Yeah, small but growing. We'll leave it there. Zach Callisto, CEO, founder of Karoo, talking results for Q1 ending May 2022.
We all have different investment needs. Some of us want to preserve our money for retirement and others to create wealth for the next generation. At Stanlib, we have a team of investment specialists that can help you achieve any investment goal. So whether your money is looking for more certainty, more return, or more impact through your investments, we have a solution for your investment needs, no matter the time horizon. Join us over the next few months as we provide insights into the solutions we offer to meet your money needs. To find out more, visit stanlib.com or speak to your financial advisor. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. License number 719.
MoneyWeb now. On the money.
Chatting now with Bongile James, investment analyst at Future Growth. Bongile, appreciate the early morning time. Last Monday, we had the president essentially announcing deregulation of the energy sector in South Africa. Everyone I speak to, consensus is that this is absolutely what has been needed and is a huge positive step for South Africa in ultimately getting not just rid of load shedding, but moving towards a renewable energy future.
Morning, Simon. Thanks for having me. Yes, I do concur with the consensus around, you know, the announcement that the president made last week. We know that these proposed reforms are meant to address load shedding, mm-hmm. As the country has been plagued with this problem. However, I must note that there are, you know, still legal and practical implications before these steps can be rolled out. In fact, we had more questions than answers at the moment, and I realized that there was also no mention of the Department of Mineral Resources and Energy, mm-hmm. the role it will play in such tracking or addressing, you know, the regulatory tape around energy and the Electricity Regulation Act. So, I mean, we know the reforms, if I may just touch on a few of them, the sure. president announced, you know, that there would be a procurement of new generation capacity. Eskom would certainly buy surplus capacity from existing independent power producers. You know, the question is now, how will this be procured? Will there be a procurement process that is rolled out, as we've seen with the previous earlier rounds? How will the tariffs around this new power procured, the additional power procured, be determined? Will it be at the current PPA rates, power purchase agreement rates, or tariffs, or will it be at a discount to the current power purchase agreement tariffs? Just another one, which I'm certainly excited about, is the easing of distributed generation regulations and new legislation. Basically, that is just the complete removal of licensing requirements for independent generation. Now, this is incentive for further private investment into electricity generation. And, you know, while these projects will not require licenses, we know that they still have to be registered with NERSA. They'll still have to comply with legislation around environmental legislation and, you know, meet technical requirements for grid connection. However, with that said, there's still, you know, I think clarity sought from NERSA as to how it will meaningfully address the legal and regulatory obstacles that these IPPs have been facing since, you know, the licensing requirement or threshold was lifted to 100 megawatts last year. We know that these projects have been battling again, you know, to get environmental and land consent. What is NERSA's views around, you know, dealing with these bottlenecks around environmental authorizations, water use licenses, agricultural land consent, and, you know, heritage consent, building plan approvals. I'm blocking the technical requirements for grid connection. So, you know, it's good to announce plans, but, you know, again, we know that there are these legal practical implications that need to be dealt with, and I think that's where the focus should be at the moment.
Yeah, I take your point on that. I mean, the plans are great, but now it's the practical part of it, the terms and conditions. You know, it's one thing to say we'll remove red tape. It's another one to practically do it. As a country, I mean, let's assume that this moves through and we get the red tape going away and the government gazettes and makes legislation as promised by the president last Monday. Do we as a country have capacity to fund it? Because a lot of these will be maybe smaller projects, but I mean, small is relatively. And I know you and your team at Future Growth do fund some. Is there an eagerness and a large enough pool of capital to fund, or is that going to be a challenge as well?
I don't believe that will be a challenge, Simon, and I think we should look at it from two perspectives. Mm-hmm. So the first perspective from my side would be an ESCOM affordability perspective. Mm-hmm. Now, I imagine, you know, these reforms around new power will be run via a transparent procurement process on an auction basis. This is what we've typically seen with the earlier procurement runs that the government can run. And, you know, with bidders who meet specific criteria being awarded. And we know that the bids around the bid window 5 of the REAP program were around 43 cents per kilowatt for solar and around 49 cents per kilowatt for wind. And so from an affordability perspective, I think those projects would tick the box.
Mm.
From a funding perspective, typically projects are funded not only with local but also international capital. To date, there's been 200 billion rand of investment to procure over 6.4 gigawatts of renewable energy across 4 bid windows. Now, there's certainly a pool of capital, and we know that the funding needs to meet the country's future energy needs are around at least a trillion rand of investment that is required in electricity before 2030. And this is just around building sufficient and new generation capacity. So we certainly, as a player in the private capital markets, we are very excited that there's certainly opportunity to deploy capital. And, you know, what better way to invest it if not in an infrastructure energy project?
Yeah, I take your point. And a trillion is a giant number, but I suppose, in truth, it's a giant number for, you know, I'm sitting here at my desk, but it is a good spend and a good benefit to the economy. We'll leave it there. Mangili James, investment analyst at Future Growth. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. Chatting with Adrian Saville around the US GDP, recession, inflation, high rates, etc., all on Friday, all looking bleak. And we asked you, how concerned are you about the US economy over the next year? It was kind of even, just over half very much worried, just under half saying it'll be fine. So a slight edge, but it was a close run race. Have your vote, have your say, Twitter and LinkedIn. This show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nabokle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.